ESPN College Football Podcast.
Welcome to the College Football Podcast. It is Wednesday, October 27th. Kevin Negandhi here with you. Booger McFarland will join us in a few minutes. We will break down the big weekend in the Big Ten East with the matchups of Michigan, Michigan State, and Penn State, Ohio State. Also, take a look at a handful of games across the country. Two in the SEC that stand out and a couple in the Big 12. And get Boog's thoughts on how important is this game this weekend for Jim Harbaugh, as well as the same question with Dan Mullen. And we'll have some sound, too, with Mike Tomlin making a statement and the quarterback, I think, that that deserves a lot more praise and attention. That is Kenny Pickett, as we talk a little bit about the ACC and give teams like Wake Forest and Pitt the deserved love that they have earned this season. But first, I want you guys to listen to ESPN's newest podcast. That is Swagoo and Perk. It's led by NFL veteran and analyst Marcus Spears. Swagoo, an NBA champ, and analyst Kendrick Perkins, two of my favorite dudes. With new episodes every Tuesday morning, Swagoo and Perk will touch on NFL and NBA news, their lives and their journeys, plus the can't-miss conversations with the top names in sports and entertainment. This is long overdue. This podcast is going to be great. Swagoo and Perk, listen, wherever you get your podcasts, two of my guys, phenomenal conversations always in the green room. And watch NBA Today on ESPN, Monday through Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Malika Andrews is at the helm. She's joined by ESPN's full cast of NBA experts, insiders, reporters, and much more. That's NBA Today, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on ESPN, the ESPN app, and wherever you listen to your podcasts. Right now, our podcast begins. Here's Bo. I want to start with specifically what we're seeing in the ACC, because listen, we're going to get deep into the Big Ten in a few minutes, but the ACC and what we saw over the weekend with Wake Forest putting up 70 points and Sam Hartman against Army. And listen, when you're facing Army, you know they're going to run the ball, right? Regardless of what happens, it's really hard to judge a team like that. But then on the other side, in the Coastal, you see what Pitt's done with Kenny Pickett. Your impressions of where Pitt is and where Wake Forest is in this conversation now that Clemson continues to slowly, you know, drift to the sunset in this season?
Well, I think they're clearly at the forefront, especially when you look at Pittsburgh. And to me, that's a really good story, man. And I know we kid all the time about some of these quarterbacks being at some of these places forever. But it takes a little time. And I think the development of Kenny Pickett and what's happened at Pittsburgh has been something that's warmed my heart, especially in a day and age where you're not a superstar immediately and you automatically move on. To see him stay there and develop, and Coach Narduzzi and his staff, they recruit, they develop. They don't always get the five-star guys. Some will say they rarely ever get them, but they develop players as good as anyone in the country. And I think that story at Pittsburgh, to me, is one of the great stories of the college football season. And then when you look at Wake, man, name me a coach that's done a better job than Dave Clawson. Like, mm-hmm. Name me one. Because if you understand what Wake is up against, I mean, just right there in their region, who they have to go against, you got to go against North Carolina State, North Carolina, other programs, and they don't get the cream of the crop. Some would say they don't even get the leftovers. And you got two programs, and you look at Pat Narduzzi and Dave Clawson that have developed teams, Kevin, that are built, and I think they're mentally tough. We always talk about that on this podcast, of teams that are mentally tough, maybe not the most talented, but you know they're dependable, and their quarterbacks are playing at a really high level.
Teams that know who they are as well,
yes,
right?
Yes.
And what comes with that? It comes with two common things that these two teams have: stability at the coaching position, and stability with the roster, in the sense of you've got guys very similar to Iowa, where they're there for their sophomore, junior, senior years, right? That you could see them come through and those guys continue to develop. And Kenny Pickett is one of those, you know, I'm not sure. And this is not a knock on Kenny Pickett. Usually when you say that, people interpret it.
It sounds like it's a knock coming. Absolutely, like, it does.
Maybe in another season, he's not in that first round conversation. He wasn't in the beginning of this season. But because we haven't seen a lot of high quality quarterback play for people that are draft eligible, Kenny Pickett has found a way to get in. He doesn't have an explosive arm. He's just super tough and he makes great decisions. And he gave us the quote of the week after that big win against Clemson.
It won't mean anything if we don't handle business these next couple of weeks. So, I mean, we're really going to enjoy this one. I'm going to go have a cold one, and then we'll get ready for Miami.
You can say I'm going to have a cold one when you're a fifth-year senior, right? And you can say that and feel good about it.
Hey, listen, there's nothing wrong. First of all, I love the fact that he's admitting he's having a cold one. And the fact that he's saying it immediately after the game, that's the emotion that we missed from college football when we were going through, not that we're out of it, but when there was no fans in the stands, the emotion wasn't there. It was a little different. Now that we have fans back in the stand, the emotion is there. They beat Clemson. You got some fans come on the field. It's there. As a college football player, as a former has-been, should I say, I remember what it was like. I remember beating the University of Florida in 1997. Shout out Monica, Kevin's wife. I know she probably hated that back then. They hadn't cared. Florida hadn't lost in like 25 straight SEC games. And we beat them. We brought the goalpost down. People were storming the field. I'm hugging and kissing babies of people I have no idea who they are. But it was just authentic. It was emotional. It was fun. And I got to say, I don't know if I had some cold ones that night, but I do remember it being a long, long night there in Baton Rouge.
Well, a long night of celebration. And
absolutely,
and Pitt deserves this. And again, best of luck with Kenny Pickett. I just think it's a phenomenal storyline for Hartman and Pickett this season. While a lot of people are scratching their heads on what happened to Clemson, what happened to Miami, what's going on with North Carolina. North Carolina could play spoiler, by the way. They still have to face Wake Forest. Big rival. And Mac will tell you that. And Mac Brown will tell you all the time, like, we've got to handle those type of teams. They also face Pitt. So I'm curious. And they've got Notre Dame on the schedule this weekend. So, you know, the way things can, you know, change for North Carolina and the way the season started, that they could play spoiler in the next 2 months. We'll see how that plays out. But congrats to Pitt and getting that W and what's for them, you know, ahead. Kenny Pickett in the Heisman conversation. Kenny Pickett now on Mel Kiper's top quarterback on his big board. Boog, how about that? That is quite a jump.
I don't know if that's a good thing based on where our guy Spencer Rattler is right now. Maybe you don't want to be the top quarterback on the board. Think about it. Two quarterbacks that Mel has proclaimed his top quarterbacks are probably having some of their worst years as quarterbacks. Big Cinco, DJ Uyunglele, and Spencer Rattler. Two guys that were at one point, Mel said on air that these were his number one QBs of certain years, and both of them have been benched at one point or another.
I will come to Mel's defense here, though. When we look at the trend over the last few years, no one had Joe Burrow at the beginning of the season. No right. one had Kyler Murray at the beginning of the season. No one had, you know, Baker Mayfield at the beginning of the season, and those guys eventually all became number one picks, right? No one had Carson Wentz at the beginning of the season, and eventually became the second pick. So it's not an exact science here in understanding where the quarterback plays at the start of the season to where they are. But you and I both looked at both those quarterbacks and said, yeah, they are predictably going to be top five quarterbacks eventually. Something's not clicking with both of them. Speaking of a program trying to figure things out, LSU and USC, obviously the biggest names when it comes to coaching searches. Texas Tech, we'll get to that in a moment when we preview the ABC games as they get ready for Oklahoma now. But Mike Tomlin's name has been brought up a handful of times when it comes to the USC job and the LSU job. And somebody asked the Steelers head coach about that yesterday, and Tomlin had a strong message for everyone. And let's just say, let's shut down the conversation and speculation.
Hey guys, I don't have time for that speculation. I mean, that's a joke to me. I got one of the best jobs in all of professional sport. Why would I have any interest in coaching college football? That'll be the last time that I address it. And not only today, but moving forward. Never say never, but never. Okay? Anybody else got any questions about any college jobs? There's not a booster with a big enough blank check. Anybody asking Sean Payton about that? Anybody asking Andy Reid about stuff like that?
I love it, man. I love it because, listen, we're listening to him. We know he's basically coming right through the screen. But if you actually watched it, his eyes throughout the room, he is scanning everybody. He's not like looking down or looking straight. He's scanning everybody saying, who's going to step up and ask me another question about this, which I just love about Tomlin.
You know what, Kev, to me, it's the best sound I've heard in a while. And I can understand Mike Tomlin's frustration because he's saying, at the very worst, if you look at the coaches in the NFL, I'm at the very worst, the second best based on my resume. Based on my resume, the only person I'm behind is Bill Belichick. And you're going to ask me, a coach who's never had a losing season, a coach who's been to multiple Super Bowls, a coach who has just put together a stellar career. You're going to ask me about a job that most would say is beneath Pittsburgh. Like, I don't think anybody is saying that the Steeler job is better than, that USC's job is better than Pittsburgh or even LSU. It's not better than the Pittsburgh Steelers. It's one of the story franchises in sports. And so for Mike Tomlin to be asked about that, and then to me, he gives you a glimpse into where he's coming from when he says, are you asking Sean Payton about this? Are you asking Andy Reid about this? Why in the hell are you asking me about this? And I understand, and I completely agree with him, because it's disrespectful. No one would ask Bill Belichick about that. And Kevin, I would think that Mike Tomlin is the closest to Bill Belichick in pro football. So I get it. It just goes to show you how, and let's understand where this came from. Carson Palmer was having a conversation on a podcast or radio show, and he brought up Mike Tomlin was on a short list. So now, you know how it goes. The scuttlebutt goes across the country. Carson Palmer is a famous alum of USC, so he's got to get asked about it. I get it. But sometimes we in the media have to have a little what I would call a common sense. And there's a way to do your job without disrespecting someone. I think that asking Mike Tomlin this right now it was kind of disrespectful. Now, I know you may disagree. You know, other people may disagree, but I do think it was disrespectful. And he responded in the appropriate manner.
Now, Carson Palmer wasn't the only one, right? Former Bills GM Doug Whaley mentioned it. He said he could leave for the opening at LSU or USC. Ryan Clark, our colleague and good buddy, mentioned it, but he did it as a recruiting process.
Correct.
Had fun with it. And he owned up to it yesterday, which was great. But you're right. And why would you leave an organization that is the most stable organization in all of pro sports, the most patient owners in all of sports? They don't do anything knee jerk. They don't respond or react to anything just because of something happened yesterday. They take their time and the process. So the Rooney family has always been patient with Tomlin in this process. So I'm glad he said what he said. I just love how he said it as of we course. Try to turn the page and move forward with all the rumors and speculation. Before we get to the ABC games, I want to kind of get your quick thoughts on Michigan and Michigan State. Because that's going to be the game where we'll learn a heck of a lot about these two teams. You know, Michigan State can, you know, they can throw the football. They can pass rush. Michigan's all about ball control. Aiden Hutchinson. How important is this game here for Jim Harbaugh?
Well, this game is a stepping stone to the other games in which I think we're going to judge him on. Because I think if you look at Michigan, we all know the game he's judged on at the end of the season. That's the game against Ohio State. We all know that. But this game will lead to bigger games. You got Penn State coming. You got at Maryland, which I don't think is going to be an easy game on the road. And then the big game, the game, as they call it. So, yes, this is a very, very important game for Jim Harbaugh, because it's the first time that we get to go against. We get to see Michigan against a team that I think is as physically tough as them. Because you know what Mel Tucker is doing up there. You know what they're doing. You know, K-9 for Heisman was a thing there for a minute. I don't think it is now. But even with that being said, you still got to deal with the running game of what Michigan State's going to do with Kenneth Walker. Peyton Thorne, play action. I love what they do. Their defense is flying around too, Kev. To me, that's the story of this game. Michigan State's defense, because that's Mel Tucker's bread and butter, against Jim Harbaugh and this vaunted rushing attack. They're going to take the rushing attack away. Okay. I would really almost bet anything you wanted, they're going to take it away. So now, can Cade McNamara and those guys on the outside, can they make enough plays? That's the story of the weekend. That is all I'm watching for in that game. That game is going to start out moving really quickly. And then when Michigan figures out we can't run, then it's going to slow down, because they're going to have to throw the ball just about every play.
Yeah, and again, the key for them has been ball control, right? And their pace. And you're not going to break our style. We're going to grind you, which will be interesting, because on Michigan State's side, it's all about Peyton Thorne's explosive plays. That's the one thing that kind of is the anti-Michigan State that we've been used to seeing in previous years that Mel Tucker's brought in with many of these transfers. These guys are explosive players on the outside, and then he's got the explosive running back that breaks off 60-yard runs. So I'm curious about how that will play out and whose style wins out as the game keeps on going. And mark this down, Aiden Hutchinson's one of those guys that could have a breakout performance on national TV where everybody's paying attention to where Michigan's defense is at in a situation like this. All right, let's get your thoughts, quick thoughts on Florida-Georgia. How important is this game for Dan Mullen? No one's putting him on the hot seat. No one's putting Jim Harbaugh on the hot seat. I'm just saying where the locals are asking for Anthony Richardson. You're coming off a bye, and this team has been a disappointment with three losses, especially what we saw and how well they played the final three quarters against Alabama and what we've seen the last few weeks. How important is this game for Dan Mullen against a Georgia defense?
And Kev, I would equate it to this. It's kind of like when UNL take a week off of SportsCenter at 6 o'clock and the people just take the social media and we want Kevin, we want Ngandi. That's what it's like right now. Like the Florida faithful, they're really not concerned about whether or not the Gators win. All they're concerned about is, do we see Anthony Richardson? It's kind of like America. America's really not concerned about what sports stories you and L share. They just want Ngandi and L Duncan at 6 o'clock. And when they don't get them, they just share with Twitter and social media. So I would equate it to this. I don't think anyone expects Dan to win. I think they expect the same type of effort that they had against Alabama. But if Anthony Richardson is not walking out there when the Gator offense takes the first snap, social media will go crazy. And I would equate it to when Kevin Ngandi is not there at 6 with his standard lean in toward L weeknights, Monday through Friday.
I need you to negotiate my next contract. That's what I need after that hype fest. I appreciate
that. it's the truth. I mean, when America tunes in at 6, they want to see, A, is Kevin there? And then B, how much hair product does he have in the day? Who has more hair product, Kevin or L? Like those.
No. L beats me. L beats me. They're not there to see my hair. Kevin. They're there to see her hair.
It's close. I'm telling you. It is close.
Love having the bald man always comment on how much hair product I use. That's what gets me each and every time. All right, but again, let's go to another game. And I'm curious about your thoughts about this with Ole Miss at Auburn. Auburn's favored by 3. How do you view this Auburn team? Like, where I feel like we ask the same question each and every week about Auburn. I have no idea what to say about where we are and what they're doing, but I know one thing: I can count on Ole Miss's offense. What can we do with Auburn when we take a look at their development and their growth here, especially playing this game at home?
Well, I think the game being at home for Auburn is the key. If Auburn is favored by 3 and they're at home, that's Vegas basically telling you to pick them because you get 3 points when you walk out and wake up in your own bed. I think the growth that we've seen from Bo Nix starting in the LSU game moving forward, I think maybe is what has Vegas feeling really good. But I don't know if I can count on Bo Nix. As a matter of fact, I wouldn't bet anything that – I wouldn't take my enemy's money and put it on Bo Nix. Like, I don't trust him. Now, that doesn't mean he's not going to go out and perform. Derek Mason, the Auburn defensive coordinator, that defense has gotten better and better. But, Kev, I think when you look at Ole Miss, I would put Ole Miss's offense up against any offense in America. They may not have the skill position players that Ohio State has, because I think Ohio State has the best set of skill position guys top to bottom. Anytime Jameson Williams transfers from Ohio State to Alabama because he can play at Ohio State, that tells you how good they are at the wide receiver position. But Ole Miss's offense is tried and true, buddy. You can count on it. Like, you turn on the game on a Saturday, and Lane Kiffin is going to do his best to put up 50 every Saturday. And I think that I don't know why Ole Miss is an underdog other than what I stated earlier. I'm going to pick Ole Miss in this game. Ole Miss did something, Kev, in the offseason not a lot of people picked up on. Last year, their defense was trash. So this year, Lane Kiffin had his defensive coordinators and his defensive staff switch from an even front to an odd front. It sounds very subtle. Hey, what's the difference between going from 4 down line to 3? It gives them a lot more flexibility defensively. Henceforth, their defense has been better this year. I'm a firm believer that you can't play college football in an even front anymore because your defense is at a disadvantage because of the spread offenses. And a lot of people are starting to come over to that side with me. So Lane switched to the odd. Their defense is playing better, and they don't have to be a dominant defense. If they just get three stops a game, Lane mm-hmm. feels like he can win, I'm telling you. And I'm going to pull for a great game, but I would lean toward Ole Miss because that offense is very, very consistent, and they are accountable every Saturday.
Let's get to our ABC games because there's a handful of intrigue. And, you know, on paper, when you come into the weekend, some of our ABC games, you're like, okay, but we've been entertained. I mean, we saw Iowa struggle. We saw Penn State. I mean, that was just, they took football back, Penn State and Illinois this past week. We saw Stanford take down Oregon. So when you look at this situation here, Texas at Baylor, Baylor's favored by 3. Dave Aranda has done an incredible job in turning that program around like Mel Tucker. We've talked about that before. What impresses me the most is he's a defensive guy, yet you look at their offense, 13th in the nation in total offense, top 10 team in rushing, and they go up against Bijan Robinson. What are you most looking forward to in a matchup like this?
You know, I think we talked a lot about Texas and what Sark has done with Casey Thompson and Bijan Robinson. I feel like we know what we're going to get there. Texas's defense is going to make a couple stops, but it's not going to be dominant. But you expect Thompson and Bijan to put up a lot of points offensively and Bijan to be the best running back in the country, which I think he is. I think something that we have not touched a lot on, and help me out here, Bohannon, is it Gary or Jerry?
Gary.
Yeah, okay, just want to make sure. I don't want to crush his name. So Gary Bohannon, Kev, think about this. He has been outstanding, only thrown one interception, and the transformation that they have made from being a quote unquote just an offense that is kind of run of the mill to being explosive. Dave Aranda is kind of going against what most defensive coordinators do. They want to play it close to the vest. Him being a head coach, they actually open it up. They can be multiple. They can play with a fullback. They can do some different things, but it's all ran and all orchestrated by Gary Bohannon. I think he's been outstanding. We don't talk enough about Baylor. We don't talk enough about what they do, but I can't be more excited to watch a game, and I can't be more really surprised by a head coach and how the team has taken his personality and ran with it than what they've done at Baylor. And Dave Aranda has done an outstanding job.
Yeah, tough loss against Oklahoma State. That's their only blemish on the season. They played really well against BYU. Bohannon started the season with 11 touchdowns and no picks. So the other thing that really stands out is Abram Smith and Treston Ebner, the two running backs. They've been outstanding with those yards per carry. And you look at those two guys, and there's a big reason why they're top 10 in the country in rushing. And then you got Bijan on the other side. How about 25 plays of at least 20-plus yards this season? The kid is so electric. If Texas had a defense, Bijan would be in the Heisman conversation, right? No, there's no doubt, because when he has the football, great things happen.
Well, I think it's up to Sark to figure out a way to get him the ball where everybody's not keying on it. So I equate Bijan, Kev, to Alvin Kamara or Christian McCaffrey. Like, you don't always have to give him rushing attempts. He needs touches. He needs 25 touches where he has a little space. Kev, he could win a game of tag in an elevator. Like, he honestly could do that. Like, that's how elusive and how good his contact balance is. So, Sark, if you're listening, which I know you are because you love SportsCenter at 6 o'clock and Kevin Negandhi, make sure that you give Bijan the ball in space. Give him 15 carries, give him 10 receptions, and out of those 25 touches, Kev, he'll get you close to 200 yards.
Sark, we appreciate the viewership, by the way. Just, I know Boog made that up, but we do appreciate the ratings bump. Okay, our second game, we're going to stay in the Big 12 later on in ABC, and this one could be really entertaining just because we have no idea what to expect with Oklahoma. I mean, what they did against Kansas and how sluggish they looked, and you and I talked about this because, at the half a couple times where, Caleb Williams is a freshman. You're going to have one of those type of games, right? But eventually he's going to figure it out because he's just the best player on the field. They face a Texas Tech team that's 5-3, but just fired Matt Wells, the head coach. Sonny Cumbie is the interim now, right? But they just lost to Kansas State. When you look at through the years, with Wells, he just hasn't performed in the Big 12. And the expectations are, hey, we want to be in the conversation. We're not expecting us to be great every single year, but we need to be in the conversation. Mm-hmm. I'm just stunned at the timing when you're getting ready to go to Oklahoma? Is this a similar deal like with LSU where, hey, we do not want any steam here to pick up, we're going to cut ties like we did with Orgeron because we do not want him to continue to win games. And then we're caught in a tough position. Is this similar in your mind, Booger, that, hey, you're 5-3. We don't want to continue to win games. And then we're put in a place where we cannot fire the head coach.
Well, I think there could be some of that, Kev, but I'm a firm believer there's never a wrong time to do the right thing. I think that's something in life we can all live by. Like, there's never a wrong. If you know this is the right thing to do, there's never a wrong time to do it. So the people at Texas Tech have figured out this was the time to do it. So they did it regardless of how it may seem to others out there, very similar to at LSU. They decided it was the right time. And who knows, Kev, maybe it's simple as this. We know we're going to fire him eventually. So rather than be behind the eight ball and have to lie to our coach and go behind the back looking for a new candidate, let's just let him go. Now we can start to do our job as an AD without having to sneak around the head coach. It could be as simple as that.
Boog, I get that. We are talking the business of the sport, right?
Correct, right.
But we're also talking about, that's tough for the players. You're getting ready for Oklahoma, and now you've got to deal with this heading into Norman. Like, I just look at, it's just a, I totally get the business part of it. And that maybe there was a lack of connection that Wells had with Lubbock, recently talking about.
When did we start caring about the players in college football? This is about money, dude.
It's just, the one thing we have seen, this trend here, especially, USC and LSU, you cut bait in the middle of the season, right? And you move on, you turn the page. We hadn't seen that before in college football, where we've seen coaches that are fired in the middle of the season and then we move on. I find that interesting. I think the December recruiting period plays a huge role as well.
Absolutely. Because now here's what I want. If I got to hire a new coach, I want that coach in place as soon as possible after the season is over. So I fully expect USC, LSU, and Texas Tech to have a coach in place by the end of November. Because that'll give the new coach 2 to 3 weeks to get on the phone, hit the street, start recruiting, and try to put together some type of class. Otherwise, you're putting your coach at a disadvantage. So I fully expect all three of those schools will have a new coach in place within a month, Kev. No question about it. As soon as toe meets leather on that last game of the regular season for all three guys, new coach will be announced the next day maybe, because now the ADs have had ample opportunities to run a search. As far as the game is concerned, Oklahoma, Kev, Caleb Williams has got to stop trying to hit home runs. There's a play in the game against Kansas, Kev, for as much as we lauded him for the spectacular plays, there's a play in the game where he has Kennedy Brooks in the flat. If he throws it to him, he gets 6 yards. If he misses the tackle, he gets 20. He doesn't even look at Kennedy Brooks, throws it down the field, and is picked off.
He's trying to hit the home run.
Yeah. He's trying to hit the home run. So hopefully Lincoln Riley has got to him and said, hey, man, just hit singles. Hit singles. And, at some point, your fastball will come eye level and you'll be able to hit a home run. Because right now he's trying to – I think he's looking at the press clippings where he was, had the fourth best odds after one start to win the Heisman Trophy. Nah, take a step back, big guy. Just be a playmaker. Get the ball to the guy that it needs to go to. And if he does that, then Oklahoma should run away with this game.
I got to tell you, though, that is the seesaw and the roller coaster of having a true freshman star, right? They completely believe in themselves, which is great, with that confidence. And they feel like they can make every single play work. That Texas play, we saw that to Mims. You're like, don't do it. Oh, my gosh, that was incredible. And it's the same situation here when he makes the mistakes. Don't do it. Why'd you do it? Well, because it was incredible just a couple weeks ago. And I believe so much in my skill set. And that's the roller coaster that Oklahoma is going to ride in close games there, because the kid can win you a lot of games because he's so savvy. So we'll see how that plays out. The games in Norman, different story, because in Lawrence, it was one of those sleepy days where they're opening up the gates and saying, hey, everybody, no one has to pay for a ticket now in the third quarter. The Jayhawks are involved. Come on down, So
can you imagine a program sending out messages at halftime? Hey, we're playing well. If you're in town, hey, finish your breakfast. Come on over. The gates are open. Nobody's there. Just walk in and grab a seat. Are you kidding me? That's so great.
And that sums up the experience of Kansas football, right? I think a lot of people wanted to see the upset over the weekend. All right. Our final game, you know, at the beginning of last week, it was like, okay, this could be something. That is Penn State at Ohio State. And I think a lot of people felt like it could be something because Ohio State has been rolling through everybody on their schedule after the Oregon game. And maybe, you know, Penn State's defense is pretty darn good. But if you don't have a competent quarterback and that, or the quarterback's playing is not 100% like we saw in Sean Clifford, that offense looks really bad. I mean, they can't consistently run. The one guy who's the star player, Jahan Dotson, I still didn't understand how come he didn't get any touches in the overtimes when they're trying to score those 2-point conversions here. What do you make of a game like this as a measuring stick for Ohio State moving forward?
Well, I don't really know if this is a measuring stick for Ohio State because I think they're clearly playing the better football of the two teams. I think the only way this game is close is if Sean Clifford is truly 100%, which Coach James Franklin said a couple of days ago, he's now 100%. I'm not sure what changed in three days. I have no idea.
He didn't look 100% against Illinois.
He didn't. Not only did he not look it, I don't even think he felt it. So Something changed in 3 days. Maybe he has some of the ice cream from the creamery up there on campus. I don't know. Maybe that's what it was. They have to get a huge day from Clifford and Dotson. Somehow, some way, they got to get some big plays over the top. Ohio State has been very susceptible with some big plays over the top. Oregon hit them with a couple. We've seen them hit down the field. So can they get a day from Dotson? Sure they can. But it's highly unlikely. I think ever since Ohio State made the adjustment from one play caller to the next on the defensive side of the ball, that defense has played a lot better. This will be a colossal upset if Penn State can go into the shoe and get this game. I think they're at a disadvantage. I think Illinois exposed Penn State a little bit. And I think James Franklin will get his best from his team. I just don't know if it's enough. Because Ohio State is so talented and C.J. Stroud is playing at a high level. And I told you from the first moment I saw him, I think Travion Henderson is going to be a superstar kid, absolute superstar. And finally, Ryan Day realized it. He took the other guys and said, hey, y'all I don't care how long you've been here. This guy's going to get more touches. Screen game, running the football. Their offensive line is humongous. I don't see any way Penn State can keep this game close.
Yeah, I don't see Ohio State lining up seven linemen either, like we saw over the weekend.
Shout out to Brett Bielema. Hey, Brett Bielema, he's never met an offensive lineman he didn't like beside his own.
But listen, he deserves all the credit. The game plan was great. Seven linemen, two tight ends, and we're just going to run the football. It's the only thing we know. And they run for 357 yards, right? Like,
dude,
just play keep away. Like that. When you have Travion Henderson there, my goodness, like Penn State's defense is going to be in for a long day. And then you've got two NFL wide receivers in Wilson and in Olave. If you like wide receivers, watch those two guys as well as Dotson. That's three first rounders on the field Saturday night in primetime. Usually we do DEFCON teams. I think we're going to wrap it up because you and I were talking about DEFCON teams beforehand. You had Penn State there. You had Clemson there. I think we don't even need to give them a number right now, the way things are going and how disappointing the season has been for both the programs.
I'll just say this. Those two teams are trending in the wrong direction. So if you're listening to this podcast, three things to pay attention to this weekend. The Clemson offense, the Penn State defense against Ohio State, and which quarterback does Dan Mullen start? If he starts Emory Jones, hide anybody that's wearing anything that's orange and blue because all hell's going to break loose.
Book, be well, man. I'll see you over the weekend. Appreciate you.
All right. Later, brother.
Big shout out to Boog. Always fun on a Wednesday. Before we go, just a few more things I want to briefly hit on. The life of the great Beano Cook, a colleague of ours at ESPN for many years, up until his death, has been written about in a book called Haven't They Suffered Enough? An unbelievable career in sports, PR, and television. Anyone that knew Beano knows the priceless stories from the world of college football that he shared and his own unique flair. Haven't They Suffered Enough? On the college football life of Beano Cook, now available on Amazon. And a reminder, we are back tomorrow, which is Thursday, bringing in our guy, Joey Galloway, making our week 9 picks. I feel good, Taylor. I feel good about the weekend. I think I've made up some ground on Joey. Plus, we'll empty the notebook with one of our ESPN.com reporters/insiders and set the table for all the action over the weekend. And shout out to Taylor Schwenk, our fantastic producer on the other side, making sure we get you the podcast each and every Wednesday and Thursday. That'll do it for us. Talk to you tomorrow.